Halashing for Halas? Want to bri or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Good morning and welcome to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's wife, coming to you from my little make-believe studio. With all the natural noises of the neighborhood surrounding me, like birds tweeting, dogs barking, the clatter of knives and forks, the sudden start of the pool filter, which will probably go off any minute now, and I can hear people whistling coming down the road to collect the rubbish. So, enjoy the noise of the neighborhood with me today. In fact, I'd never really noticed them until lockdown, and I had to start recording at home. And the such beautiful noises, the noises of life, things that happen without me being at home. Anyway, last week my granddaughter comes flying through and she says, "Boba, you are not going to believe it. You see this tomato I'm holding?" I said, "Yeah." She says, "You've got them growing in your garden." I said, "What are you talking about? I've never ever grown tomatoes." I mean, I suppose, you know, people can eat a tomato and drop the seeds and whatever, but I knew that tomatoes are very difficult to grow because they have to climb up sticks. We used to grow them on our farm and they were a pain. Anyway, so I thought, you know what, let me go foraging with her. So the two of us went into the back. We found the most amazing herbs, vegetables. I think the rain obviously caused things to poke their little heads up. As well as, I must say, buying at Checkers, I was given some of these little seedlings. And I put them into a sort of box, one of these concrete cement boxes. And they started growing beautifully. And so I decided today that I'm going to share recipes with all those gorgeous edible green herbs that I found growing in my garden. And as I foraged further, I was absolutely shocked to see what I could use in my dishes. I mean, so after clearing away another patch of ground, because now I've started growing pumpkins and butternuts, I take the seeds out, dry them a little, and I've started growing those. I'm starting to grow, I'm sure. Well, I won't be around, I'm sure, but the owners of this house, the next owners, will have beautiful peach trees, plum trees, I think even apple trees, nice watermelon, pawpaws. So I've really put my whole heart and all my effort into growing beautiful herbs and vegetables. Oh, and I've got cabbage growing as well, spinach, and the most wonderful aubergines, or eggplants as some people call them. So I'm going to share some recipes. I suppose we could call this show In Sharon's Garden, or From Sharon's Garden. But after the break, I'll come back to you with some Sukkot experiences, some questions that I'm going to open to the floor, and I would love some answers back from you. I'll be talking about planting your own herbs and things, and if I can do it, believe me, anybody can do it.
Halashing for Halas? Want to bri or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Welcome back to the Essen Fressen Show, where I said that I'd be sharing some thoughts and ideas that you can use all year round. Doesn't have to be just for Sukkot or for the Chagim, but just some of the popular things that seem to go so well over Sukkot. So, as I said to you, you know, I normally do different themes for Sukkot. Each night is a different thing. Now, I mean, of course, the first night we had a lovely brisket. Second night, I turned that into pulled beef. Third night, I turned that into pierogan, what was left over. Nobody really noticed that we were recycling. But that's what we do during Sukkot, because we don't have the same people every night, so we can do that. One thing that I had a lot of fun with was I have a round vase. I suppose it's like a fishbowl. And I got some chicken wire and I put it on top. And what I did was I pushed through the chicken wire. I pushed celery, sticks of celery, carrots cut. Sort of, I would say everything was about 6 inches, or what's that, 12 centimeters, 10, 12 centimeters long. I got some fresh asparagus, which I just put into boiling water for about 30 seconds, blanched them, took them out, and stuck those into the little holes of the chicken wire, cucumber, fennel. I even made sausage sticks out of mushrooms and baby tomatoes. And suddenly I had an array of stick vegetables, I would imagine you could call them, as a centerpiece. So now I always put everything on the patio table. I don't have anything on my table in the sukkah. And everybody comes and helps themselves, because 9 times out of 10 it's going to rain. I don't set my table. I put everything outside and then, you know, we take it into the sukkah. So I decided to use this bowl of fresh vegetables as a centerpiece. I also got a cauliflower. Now, cauliflower obviously is, we can't eat because it's so difficult to check. But I just stuck that in the middle and it just looked so pretty. I suppose you could put a cabbage in the middle, because people aren't going to eat the cabbage or the cauliflower because it's just too difficult to pull apart. And they've got the choice of all the other vegetables. And then what I did was, if there was any space or you could see any of the wire, I just shoved in some parsley and some coriander, fresh coriander, all from the garden. And it looked quite nice. And you could eat it. Edible flower arrangement, we could call it. Anyway, so we all think, I know, that growing our own vegetable garden can be rather difficult. But in all honesty, it is far easier than you think. I mean, as I said to you, I started going through my garden and I found so many different herbs that I'd forgotten that I'd even started growing, like thyme and oregano, and I mean some of the things I had to taste to see what it really was. And all you really need are the right tools, a bunch of seeds, a couple of tips and guidelines, and you're ready to go. Now, I was going to get somebody on air today who was going to help us with starting up our own gardens, but I'm sure most of you, if you're anything like me, you just sort of sprinkle the seeds in a box and then they start growing and you separate everything. And I just found that it's just so therapeutic and relaxing. Planting my own little garden, and so exciting finding things. And I just, if you're like me, I can't bear to go to the shops every week to go grocery shopping and getting herbs and things like that. And especially now during these dreaded times. Firstly, you need to decide, obviously, you know, where you want to place your veggie garden. Now, you don't have to have a veggie garden. I mean, my daughter's got pumpkins growing amongst all sorts of beautiful flowers. Just take a walk around your garden and look for a nice spot which has both shade and sunlight, depending, of course, on the plants that you want to grow. I know that rosemary, the rosemary bush needs a lot of sun. It likes warmth. And then you're on your way. And just remember that always make sure that the soil feels damp. Okay, because you don't want it to be too wet because you can kill off the herbs. Don't want it to be too dry. So always make sure that it's sort of damp around your herbs and your vegetables. So there was one particular recipe that I wanted to share with you that came from my lemon tree and the mint from my garden. And it is so popular, I think we're going to have to serve it every Shabbos. So, this is the lemon tree's turn. So just using, I also used the leaves, I must tell you, very carefully. I pulled some leaves off the lemon tree because it's quite thorny. And I actually put that into my vegetable display as well that I was talking about earlier. So here are the ingredients that you'll need for this lovely, fresh, sparkling lemon juice. I used 1 cup of lemon juice, fresh lemon juice that I squeezed, 1 cup of sugar, added that to the lemon juice and just brought it to the boil, to a simmer rather, and I added about 8 or 10 mint leaves. I switched off the heat and I just let it stew in its own juice, so to speak. And then I strained off those mint leaves because they go sort of a dark, limpish sort of color. And then what I did was I did add more fresh mint, but that was obviously before serving so that it was lovely and bright and green. So I took that lemon juice and or some simple syrup we could call it, which is the 1 cup of lemon juice and 1 cup of sugar, and allowed it to cool. And then I put a couple of ice blocks into the big jug, and I put the simple syrup with the lemon simple syrup into the jug, which is cool, and I added 1 liter of sparkling water, and then I just filled the jug up with a little bit more ice, a couple of fresh lemon twists for garnish, and the fresh mint. And it went down so well. I mean, hardly anybody had any of the cold drinks that we had. I actually forgot to also mention that we found peppers, beautiful bell peppers, which were growing out in the back. And, you know, they start out green, and each color, you know, we see the green and the orange and the yellow and the red, and each color reflects a degree of ripeness. Did you know that? So red bell peppers are at the most mature ripening stage, and they have the sweetest flavor and twice as much vitamin C than a green bell pepper would have. And people often wonder why bell pepper prices vary so much depending on the color. And most people don't know. And I didn't know until I really went into it. And it just seems that green peppers are cheaper because we pick them sooner. So it's quite a simple answer. Anyway, as I said to you a few shows ago, that since I had COVID, my taste buds have completely changed. Never ate peppers. All of a sudden, I have a thing for peppers. You have no idea. I think the whole lining of my mouth peeled away and my tongue. So I think all of a sudden I started getting these wonderful cravings for peppers. So of course now it's pepper time. Time to share a pepper recipe with you. And what you'll need for this is 3 to 4 bell peppers. Okay, you can use red, green, yellow, whichever ones you want. I actually just use green because that's all I had in my garden. And of course I wanted to pick them sooner rather than later. You'll need 1 large onion. Okay, so for this recipe, I didn't use a red or purple one. I have given you a recipe before for peppers, a pepper salad. But for this particular recipe, I stuck to white onion because the red or the purple one tends to make the potato, which we're going to add to the salad, go a sort of pinkish color. So you'll also need two large potatoes, boiled, peeled, and cubed. A stick of celery. I use 6 Israeli cucumbers because I find that it's easier to slice them into smaller bite-sized pieces. Cut them in half and you just cut them up. And then, of course, fresh basil, just torn over and put over the top of it. And a salad dressing, which I will give you the recipe for. It is 1/2 cup of white vinegar, 1/2 cup of white sugar or a sugar substitute, 1 cup of oil, 1 teaspoon of mustard powder, salt and pepper. Now you may think, oh, there's quite a lot of salad dressing here, but what happens is sometimes the potatoes absorb a lot more of the dressing than you'd expect it to. So what I like to do is I like to make it early in the morning, and then pour about 3/4 or 2/3 of the salad dressing over the salad. And then just before serving, add the rest of the salad dressing to it, because by then I can see sort of how much the potatoes have absorbed of the salad dressing.
Chalashing for chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? Stay tuned to Chai FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
So, as I said, what you need to do is cube all the vegetables about the same, smaller than bite size. So you need them like about a centimeter by a centimeter. Comfortable enough for your mouth. Okay, so that you can get everything. You can get the crunch of the pepper. You can get the crunch of the onion. The sweetness and the softness of the boiled potatoes. And the crispiness of the celery and the cucumber. And then, of course, the taste of the wonderful fresh basil, which I like to tear up rather small and just stick it on top, because you cut basil, it tends to go black on the edges. So I just tear it up at the end and put it on. And just all these ingredients just are a wonderful combination of textures. I mean, you can, if you want, you can add a little bit of mayonnaise if you want to that. You can add some cubed up or grated eggs, boiled eggs if you want to. But that is the basic recipe that I use, because I don't eat eggs, but I know other people do. And they said, you know what you should have put on here is boiled eggs. Okay, so I'm sharing that with you. So you could actually, whatever you have a mouthful, I've learned in the last few months, just add it to your salad. You want something sweet, add a little bit of pineapple to it. Now, of course, one of the prizes while foraging through my garden was the eggplants that I found. Now, I mean, that purplish, browny, black color that was peeping through my flowers. I got so excited, I just had to pick them. And they were quite big, so it was lovely. And I felt a bit guilty pulling them off the stem, but that lovely green contrast against that purple of the eggplant was something to behold. Anyway, but we have to eat them. So let me give you this aubergine recipe. You'll need 3 large aubergines sliced with the skin on, and you slice them about 1 centimeter thick. You'll also need 1 or 2 hot bird eye chilies. We love chili, but if you want to, you can just put one in. You can remove the seeds because that's what really makes them hot. But it depends on how hot you prefer your salad. You'll also need half a cup of chopped spring onions, 2 sticks of celery, cut in half. And then what I did was, I cut in half the length, I mean, of the whole stick. And then what I did was I took a potato peeler and I peeled the celery into thin strips, put them into some cold water. Actually amazing how they cool up, but they don't stay cooled for too long when you cook them. And you'll also need about a third of a cup of toasted sesame seeds. Toasted, you can dry fry them, you can stick them in the oven, you can put them in the microwave and crisp them up. But watch them in the microwave because they can burn quickly. And then the sauce for the sauce. It's a terry. I have a thing about calling it terry yucky sauce because for me it's terry yummy sauce. So this is a terry yummy sauce which you will use. You will also put the aubergines once you've fried them back into the sauce, but we'll go through that. So let me just give you the ingredient list. You'll need half a cup of soy sauce, 1/4 cup of rice vinegar, or you can use white vinegar, or you can use white wine vinegar. You'll also need 1/4 cup of brown sugar. I like the muscovado. I just, the molasses and the sweetness in it just takes it to another level. 1 tablespoon of freshly grated ginger. Or you can mince it if you want, but I grate it on the small hole of the grater. 1 teaspoon of garlic crushed. 2 tablespoons of honey. Now, if you don't want to use honey, you can use agave nectar, which you can get at most health stores. Or a sweetener of your choice. And then you need 1/4 cup of Shabbos wine or a sweet red wine, but it must be sweet. And 1/2 cup of cold water mixed with 3 heaped teaspoons of cornstarch or mzina, whatever you want to call it. For those overseas, it's a cornstarch. We just know it here commonly as mzina in the yellow and white box. So what you will do is, to start off with, first of all, the recipe for the terry yummy sauce, you just combine everything together and you mix the cornstarch in a bowl with the cold water. Remember, you can't mix it with hot water because it goes clumpy. It's got to be cold water until it goes completely smooth. Throw it into a little pot, bring it to the boil and just set it aside. Okay, so in a large frying pan or wok, you heat some oil to coat the bottom of your pan. You can use sesame oil, but it's not necessary because you're going to put quite a bit of sesame into the recipe. And you just coat the bottom of the pan and you fry in batches. You fry the eggplant. Now, eggplants, or aubergines, whatever you want to call them, they absorb quite a lot of oil, so you know, just coat the bottom, turn it over. Don't worry too much if they're not cooked all the way through, but try and get them to cook all the way through. Turn the heat down and cook them through. And then as you cook each batch, remove it, set it aside in another bowl. You may have to add more oil to the frying pan, but you know, don't get too hung up on the oil. And then what I did was, I added the, you can either make the sauce before, the day before, or if you're in a hurry, like I'm always in, I just used the same frying pan and I threw all the ingredients together into a bowl for the terry yummy sauce. And then I just threw that into the wok or the frying pan that I used, brought that to the boil, added the chili, celery, the spring onion and the sesame seeds and allowed it to simmer for another 3 minutes. Then what I did was I threw the aubergines back into the sauce so that I could ensure, A, that they were cooked all the way through, and B, them to absorb all those beautiful flavors from the teriyami sauce and the toasted sesame and the celery and the spring onions. And then I would say I let that simmer for about 10 minutes and then allowed it to cool, simmer it on low and put the lid on so that it doesn't evaporate. You don't want the sauce to evaporate. And then I allowed it to cool, refrigerated it, and then just before serving, I sprinkled it with some more sesame seeds. You can sprinkle it with cashew nuts if you want to. Or you can add some of those lovely dried ramen noodles. So whatever you feel like adding to the salad, add. But give it a nice crunch at the end because it's soft. Aubergine salad is soft, but the cashew nuts and the noodles will make it nice and crunchy. As you know, I love textures. So we've used up a few of the herbs and vegetables from my garden. And now let's go to a lemon and rosemary chicken, which I served one night. I actually made like a kishka stuffing, which I served separately, which I rolled up in baking paper and baked that, which I will give you the recipe for after this. But I did a spatchcock chicken with lemon and with fresh rosemary from my beautiful rosemary bush. And it was quite simple. And there is nothing better than lemon and rosemary and a dash of honey, the sprinkling of your favorite barbecue spice over chicken. Delicious. So what you do is you order one plain spatchcock chicken. Not a marinated one, just a plain one. So what is a spatchcock chicken? It is a chicken cut in half through the backbone. Okay. Then you will also need for this recipe 2 to 3 tablespoons of honey. Now it depends on how big your chicken is. So you'll need about 2 to 3 tablespoons of honey, which I actually warmed up in the microwave. It just makes it easier to paint on the chicken afterwards. You'll also need a lemon cut into, depending on the size of your lemon, but you'll need one lemon cut into slices, about 0.5 centimeter each slice. A small onion peeled and sliced into rings or into, into leaves. So you can cut it into a quarter and then pull the leaves off the onion. You'll also need about 4 to 6 sprigs. Rather twigs of rosemary so that it's firm enough to hold the chicken. So the chicken is going to be resting on the rosemary and the onions and the lemon. So what we do is we preheat the oven to about 180. Then what I did was I placed the rosemary into a small roasting pan. You don't want the roasting pan to be too big because then all the juices evaporate and you're not left with a lovely moist chicken. You want a small roasting pan. And then I crisscrossed the rosemary twigs on the bottom of the pan, of the roasting pan. Then I placed the sliced lemon on top of the rosemary and the onions on top of that. Then I placed the chicken bone side down. So in other words, the skin is facing you. I then painted the skin of the chicken with the honey and I sprinkled it with your favorite barbecue spice. I mean, we all have our favorite barbecue spices. I know it's an amazing thing. When I go to America, my family come out from America, they bring me their barbecue spice. And what do? They take back South African barbecue spice. They love it. Anyway, so I painted with the honey and I sprinkled the barbecue spice over it. And I cook it covered for 40 minutes, okay? It's with the skin facing me. Remember, it's a spatchcock chicken, so it's a flat chicken, which we've put on top of the lemon pieces and the rosemary and the onion. And then what I did after my 40 minutes, remove the lid. Don't turn the chicken over. No need to turn the chicken over. And then I upped the temperature to about 190 and I roasted it until the skin is really lovely and golden brown and crispy. That should take about another 20 to 25 minutes. But the taste of the lemon and the rosemary, it just, and the onions just permeates through the chicken and keeps it really lovely and moist. And it should be nicely browned with the, and where the juices run clear. You can see that the juices run clear when you take it out. And the legs, another way of testing whether it's ready, the legs should actually be able to move easily when it's done. So that is a simple, simple, I mean, if you love garlic like we do, you can put a couple of garlic cloves with the onions and the lemons and the rosemary, but not necessary. Sprinkle it with a little bit of salt and pepper if you think that your barbecue spice isn't enough. Cut it up into pieces and just serve it with over some rice or with some roast potatoes or whatever vegetables you love. So after the break, I will be coming back with some more recipes from the garden of Sharon Lurie.
Chalashing for Chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? Stay tuned to Chai FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bagatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Welcome back to the Essen Fressen show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and I'm sharing recipes from my garden, so to speak. So all the herbs and vegetables that I found recently after foraging with my granddaughter inspired me to make some recipes using those herbs and vegetables. Now, it's, everybody always says, oh, it's so easy to grow a herb garden, whatever. But I always think to myself, what about the compost? What about the soil? What about this and that? But I must say, all I can tell you about compost is that my sister-in-law has the most magnificent vegetable and herb garden. And for years, she throws all her old bread. She does recycling. And she throws all her old bread, her cereal, the potatoes, vegetable skins, tea bags, coffee. I mean, everything goes into this one particular dustbin. And that's what they throw over all their vegetables. And I mean, she really does have beautiful stuff. So it's a vegetable gardens are basically a win-win situation, because especially if you grow your herbs amongst your flowers, that's really beautiful. One of my favorite herbs happens to be basil, and I have quite a lot of basil, so I really wanted to make something lovely and Italian. And in fact, the one night I was having, four of my guests were vegetarians. Can you believe it? Four vegetarians. Anyway, I thought, what am I going to make? I mean, because we are such meat eaters. And I thought, okay, so you know what I'll do? I'll make a lasagna, but I'll use the veggie mince. So, I mean, it looked, finally when it was cooked, it really looked beautiful, but it felt so weird because there was veggie mince in it, which looked exactly like mince meat. So there was this mince and this cheese. But anyway, let me give you the recipe for that, because that was a real winner. And I think the most important thing with a lasagna is that you've got to know your layers. And when layering your lasagna, you've got to start with a thin layer of sauce so that the lasagna sheets don't stick to the dish. Okay, then you add the lasagna sheet, then the cheese sauce, and then the veggie mince. And you repeat it in that order. So, some people say, some of the boxes of the lasagna say that you don't have to cook it first. What I like to do is I just drop it into boiling water, sheet at a time, so that it doesn't stick together. And then I do my layers. And what I did was it was so easy. I went to Super Sconta, and I got two bottles of their tomato and basil sauce in the glass jars, and I mixed that with a packet of the veggie mince that you can get. I think it's Friars or one of them that are kosher. Mixed that together, cooked it up, added some garlic, and of course a little bit of basil. And then to make the white sauce and the cheese sauce was just so easy. You know, I made up the white sauce by making a roux that is 125 grams butter and then a cup of flour, and then I added milk until I got a lovely thick, with a whisk of course, and I got a lovely thick layer of white sauce. And to that I added cream cheese, not cottage cheese, because it goes, it's a bit too lumpy in the lasagna. So I added cream cheese, I added cheddar cheese, I added mozzarella cheese, all these different cheeses, and got this wonderful flavor of cheeses with this so-called mock mince, which, as I said, was a bit weird to eat. But anyway, so I did the layers. I did layered a little bit of cheese sauce, and then I put some of the mock meat sauce on top of that, which I'd mixed with the tomato and basil sauce ready made. And then I added another layer of cheese sauce, another layer of pasta, and until I finished it all. Baked it on quite high, because you wanted it to go sort of quite crispy on top. And if you can't get kosher parmesan, then just put nice strong cheddar on top of that. And I baked that on 190 for about 35 minutes until you sort of see the bubbles coming through. And of course, it's always best to serve a lasagna straight away, because the pasta seems to absorb all the sauce. If you want an action replay the next day, then I would add some cream to it and a little bit more cheese, and then you've got some leftover, if you've got some leftover lasagna. But thank goodness I didn't have any leftover. They all enjoyed it, and everybody keeps asking me to reassure them. So, are you sure this is not mince? It looks exactly like mince. Well, most certainly wasn't mince, and for the vegetarians, it most certainly was mock mince. So that's our basil, and that was our Italian evening. And after the break, I'm going to come back with another recipe for something more sweet.
Chalashing for chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? Stay tuned to Chai FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Welcome back to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and I'm coming back with such a simple recipe that I was actually shocked when my sister-in-law phoned from America, and she said to me, "Shah, you've got to try this. It's called a lemon soda cake." And all it is just two ingredients. And I said, "Ooh, how can it be just two ingredients?" So she said, "No, you've got to try it. if you can get, in the old days I used to be, I was able to get Duncan Hand cake mixes, but now I can't seem to find them anywhere. So you need a box of lemon cake mix, or use vanilla cake mix, whichever you prefer, your favorite, and a can of lemon twist soda. And you just mix it together with a whisk or a beater, and you bake it in a well-greased bundt tin, and then you ice it with icing sugar, which would be 2 cups of icing sugar and about 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, or just to get it to that right consistency that it sort of drips over the cake. And that's all it is. She said, however, if you want to go more sort of cordon bleu, then you can make it with a box of cake mix, a small box of instant lemon pudding, a can of lemon twist or a similar lemon soda. But because you're adding the lemon pudding, you need to add 4 eggs and 3/4 cup of vegetable oil. Mix it all together and bake it. She said for this recipe, she would rather use a rectangular baking dish, which would obviously make it a little bit more puddingy, so to speak. And then you can still glaze it with your icing sugar and some lemon juice. And I actually added some cut up strawberries and blueberries and placed them on top of the icing, on top of the glaze, and served it as a pudding. Before I end off, I need to reach out to the community and I need some help. Your answers can come to SC, S for sugar, C for Carol, Lurie, L-U-R-I-E, @gmail.com. And I'm working together with a friend and we found out about, I'm not quite sure if it's Jutzetert or Judentert or something similar, how it originated. Is it originally a South African tart that maybe somebody made and somebody said, have you tried the Jutzetert? We're not quite sure exactly where it came from, but what we do know is that it's layers of either biscuit or cake with custard. And I'm just trying to find out where it originated from. Is it Russian? Is it Polish? And if anybody knows anything about Jutzetert, please, I have looked up on the internet, but I actually want personal stories, things where perhaps your mom or your grandmother or your great-grandmother, somebody used to make it, and maybe it's called Jewish tart in your home. I'm not quite sure. If anybody has any info on Jutzetert or Judentert or anything like that, please let me know. I'd love to hear on S for sugar, C Lurie, SC Lurie @gmail.com. So I'm looking forward to hearing from you. If anybody has information on that, thank you. I was hoping to give you another recipe, but it seems as though I'm out of time and I don't want to go overboard. So remember, it's the eaten meat that makes this show complete, and looking forward to sharing some Hanukkah recipes with you very soon.